The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
On today's UFC Unfiltered, my co-host Jimmy is away, but he calls in and we talk about the Conor McGregor and Mayweather fight. And also, we got my good buddy, Big Dog, Ricardo Almeida is in studio. Hell of a show. Give a listen.
Jaws are dropped throughout this arena. Nobody is sitting down.
Chasing that finish. Elbows raining down.
Oh! On the button.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, he hurt him again.
He's out.
This is UFC Unfiltered. And now, your hosts, Jim Norton and Matt Serra.
Well, you're half right. It's not Jim Norton here. It's me, Matt Serra. I hate to do a third person thing. And sitting in, and know what I'm happy about, Chris the producer?
What's that?
I'm not happy when Jimmy leaves, but I do use this. I use this show sometimes to my own benefit to catch up with old friends.
Sure.
I've done that with my master, Henzo Gracie. I've done that with that freak, John Danaher. And now, my jiu-jitsu brother, Ricardo Almeida, Henzo Gracie black belt. Yes! Yes! He deserves an applause.
What's up, guys? Thank you.
Already.
Thank you.
And I'm going to get you straight right now because Chris the producer, take a look at him. And he's one of the brightest guys I know. But hold on one sec. Don't move. Watch this. All right, I had to fix his headset. If he wasn't so dangerous, I would have goofed on him some more. But it was one of the things was backwards. Hey, Cardo, I'm so happy you're here.
I'm so happy to be here, man.
We're gonna catch up today.
Yeah, for sure.
We got Jimmy Norton calling in soon, and we're gonna talk about the fight that just happened this weekend between Mayweather and McGregor. Did you watch?
Yeah, I watched it. Yeah, for sure.
Thank goodness. Your thoughts on it,
man? You know, I think anytime two guys fight, someone, you know, they both have a chance.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt that Mayweather was going to control and dominate.
Yeah.
But Conor definitely had a puncher's chance early.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's kind of how the fight went. You know, I got to say I was surprised at how well McGregor did.
He looked, you know what I like about it, and I'm going to tell Jimmy too when he calls in, is beforehand, I seen like those, some of those sports shows when they have those little round tables and they had all these boxing guys on and they were so damn smug, Chris, the producer. They were just so, 100%. We all know it's a spectacle. And the guy, if he's lucky, if he lands he's not going to land one punch and he's going to get, it's going to be a shutout. And so it was different than that. I like that. It was different. I mean, Conor did show that he looked like he belonged in there.
He won the first three rounds.
100%. 100%. I couldn't believe that he was actually countering Mayweather. He hit like some really nice counter combos right off the bat, you know, it was tough.
A beautiful uppercut. I don't know if that was the first round.
Or yeah, I think it might have been
right uppercut. Yeah,
but second round, whatever.
I mean, but you see him land that same uppercut in MMA. He has a way. I was waiting. I thought maybe Floyd would come out like aggressively, just try to show that he doesn't belong in there with him, you know. And he did fight towards the end like that, but I didn't know he'd be so. I like in the very beginning when he was defensive, he's usually defensive. But I was waiting for him to come back. I don't know what the numbers are, but he hardly threw any punches that first round, Floyd.
I think it was four or six or something. I said, yeah.
That's unusual. No, I feel like we should save a little bit of this for Jimmy.
Yeah, for sure. Let me get him.
Get him on the phone while I catch up with Ricardo.
Yeah. Why don't you let the fans know
who Ricardo Almeida is?
Yeah, well, like a little background, you know?
I'm going to bring it. But the thing is this. I don't want to get interrupted, but I'll start it off. Ricardo Almeida is a Henzo Gracie black belt. And technically, because he was... Listen, this is funny because I'm known as the first American
black belt.
Don't even
start with this.
I got to do it though because it's not fair. Because I always say that I am the first American black belt.
I have an American passport, man.
You do. I know. So you technically are the first American, but I consider you, I consider you Brazilian because you came over here. When did you come over here?
I came as a brown belt already. So you're the first Henzo Gracie black belt that was, you know, born and made. And built in the assembled in the United States.
Wait, you went over to Brazil at what age?
So my parents were going to school here when I was born here in New York, and I went back when I was 2.
Yeah.
And then I trained, you know, I lived there until I was 20.
So you went there at 2 years old.
Yeah.
I'm the first American to ever. Huh? Yeah, obrigado, motherfucker. No, I'm only kidding. I want to get into your whole career. I don't want to do it and get interrupted, but basically, like right now, people watching the fights, and I don't want to say newbies, like it's a bad thing, but guys new to the game, they'll be like, oh, there's Frankie Edgar's jiu-jitsu coach, or Eddie Alvarez's jiu-jitsu coach, Edson Barboza's, he's in his corner. Those are your three guys in there, and we got Zabit coming up.
Yeah, we'll talk about him in a second.
Corey Anderson, yes, man, you got a stable.
Marlon Moraes just signed with the UFC too, just in his first fight, yeah.
So you're busy, so they'll look at you as a coach, but what these young kids don't know is that you had a hell of a career in fighting. First of all, you're still competing in jiu-jitsu and whatnot, but in fighting, starting in Pride, you had a great... me and you had our debut in our UFC together at UFC 31 back in the day.
Yeah, man.
Which, what are you doing over there? No, fucking creeping.
God damn it, I was just hanging up. No.
Tell me we can't get my own co-host on the phone.
We'll get him.
Holy fuck. But anyway.
And that was a great card too, man. That was, we had Randall on that
this
card.
This was 2001.
Randy Couture and Pedro Rizzo. BJ had the debut that day too.
It's amazing. Before we get to that, let's start getting into, you started jiu-jitsu at what age exactly?
Like 15 years old.
15 years old.
Yeah.
And that's Gracie Baja, correct?
Yeah. My dad wanted me to, you know, learn self-defense. And just by chance, Gracie Baja was like walking distance from my house.
Was it the headquarters, the one I went to when
I was there? Yeah, the one that we went a couple of times back together and trained there. And, you know, Master Carlos Gracie Jr. was the main instructor. And Hans was the only black belt.
And how old were you again?
Like 15.
15. And your brother Flavio came also?
Flavio came like a year after. I brought him in a year after.
Now, you're one of those guys, were you originally, did you adapt to it like a fish to water? Did it come to you easily, jiu-jitsu? Or were you hooked automatically, like instantly? Or did it take you a little bit to keep going and then, you know, you...
I think there's there's a couple of things in jiu-jitsu that you need to learn, you know, like, you know, I think three elements. You gotta have, you know, just the athletic element, learn the movements. You know, if you're not athletic and you can't learn the movements, like, it's hard, you know?
Yeah.
And then secondly, to be humble enough to understand that you only learn jiu-jitsu taking a beating. You know, you gotta train with good guys.
The ego check.
And then the next one that I think it's just putting both of them together is just learning how to learn, you know, learning how to teach yourself how to get better at jiu-jitsu. Because if you just come and roll, you're basically, you know, you're like a tool for other people to get better, competing with you. So I think early on, I did have the physical element. And I think the environment that we came from, Gracie Baja and Hans, was a lot like that too, you know, where, you know, it wasn't so much about who won. It was more about who has to quit, you know. Like,
yeah.
So just the type of culture that we came up in of not wanting to quit, doesn't matter who taps who doesn't quit. Like, I think those things taught me how to learn better jiu-jitsu, you know, at least how our teachers wanted us to learn.
How did you end up at 20 or 21 coming over to New York in 1997?
20, I was 20.
20 years old. I remember. The first night you got there. 20 years old. You were kicking ass in tournaments, correct?
Yeah. Yes. I just won the national.
I remember Henzo telling me when you were coming, man, I got this kid coming. And I remember, he was so excited. And it was so great. It was so great for me personally because we had a tough guys there, but we had a lot of tough guys there, but not somebody at your level to put a beating, to put me in very defensive positions. Does that make sense? I'm not saying I was the best guy there, but I was very good at the time. And we were still a young, growing academy, even though there was a lot of students. But being one of the head guys, having a higher belt come in, and I believe you got the brown belt right there, correct?
I got my brown belt just before I came.
How'd you end up coming over anyway?
So, like, you know, I was in college. I started college, and I wasn't really liking what I was doing. I was doing industrial engineering.
Because you're a smart motherfucker. guys like this, Christopher D'Souza, look at him. Brazilian Adonis. Look at the shape he's in still. I instantly regretted wearing a tank top, great tank top. I saw this motherfucker. But, you know, the guy's got brains, man. But go ahead.
So between, you know, experimental physics and thermodynamics, I'm like, man, I can't do this. You know, like, and I had a passport. You know, I had an American passport, so it wasn't that hard for me to come here. I had a mutual friend, and Hansel was opening the Philadelphia school. I don't know if you remember.
Of course I do.
And he needed an instructor, so I'm like, man, this is a good time for me. I had a car. I sold my car, and I just packed two suitcases, and I came. And, I remember the first day, getting to Hansel's house and hopping on the train and coming to New York and just kind of walking up the steps at Penn Station and just, man, like, what am I doing here? You know, this place is huge.
Yeah.
And then walking on to the academy, you know, coming from Brazil where we never trained without the gi. And it was more of like a sport jiu-jitsu type of style, you know.
I remember.
And then walking into the academy and training with you and training with Nikki. And, you know, that kid Brian there, we used to have, like, long legs Brian. You know, he actually caught me in the triangle. Like, the first day that I came, I'm like a freaking brown belt, you know, national champion in Brazil. Yeah. And I'm getting caught by a blue belt. And it was just a different style of jiu-jitsu. A lot more, like, combat-oriented, you know. And the wrestlers. You know, the wrestlers that could put us down and keep us down. We couldn't move. So it was, I think it took me a year to adapt to this type of game, you know. But I think that later on when I started fighting MMA, because of the style that we had here, it was much easier for like me and you to adapt to MMA than I think just a typical
jiu-jitsu.
Brazilian black belt that only competes in the gi, you know?
And in the tournaments, whatnot. Even with just the gi, though, it's more the mentality. Henzo's style of jiu-jitsu, the way he, it was basically both our college, pretty much. Like, I was right out of high school. I started there. You were, 20 years old. That was like our college.
Yeah.
We were at the Henzo Gracie Academy here in Manhattan. But it's what Henzo's style of jiu-jitsu, and Henzo's big on the gi also, that I don't know if people really, just a casual fan realizes because they know Henzo from fighting and whatnot. Henzo's huge on the gi.
Yeah.
Henzo's a big believer in the gi. But his style that he passed on to us, it's without the gi, it transcends from MMA to street to sport jiu-jitsu to Abu Dhabi, jacket, no jacket. I mean, I have the same philosophy in each area. It serves me the same way. Does that make sense? In other words, nowadays, and I'm not hating on any new school stuff. Like, I know leg locks right now is the hugest thing. And we're going to get into that later on, too. I want to hear some thoughts about that. But, like, in other words, like, with the submission game, it could be a totally different way of thinking than an MMA fight, where to me, it's not really. I'm on bottom. I'm looking to either finish or reverse to get on top, and I'm looking to stay on top, not just to go back down and lay for something that I might lose, because I'm looking to dominate position and get the superior position in the fight, which would also be the most points for a tournament. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. You know, Hansel had like two things. One, there's just natural aggressiveness.
Yes.
You know, like, Hansel's the nicest guy in the world, the biggest smile in the world, but like when he's angry, he's not anywhere near nice. You know, he could put a hurt on someone very quickly.
Yes.
So I think that translates into his game competing. You know, he always had a, number one, just very aggressive looking to finish. And then number two, very open-minded. You know, like, he wasn't bound by, you know, like the jiu-jitsu guys, you know, you only have to do jiu-jitsu. He was with the first, like, Gracie to learn boxing and wrestle and Muay Thai and become well-rounded, you know?
And we had that guy, remember from, he started the Raw team, Rico Ciparelli. Remember Rico? Ciparelli?
When I came, he had already left.
Oh, did he leave already?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I had some battles with him, man. He was a tough dude, tough wrestler.
Super high-level wrestler. Ooh, I remember Hansel talking about him.
Man, oh, it was good. The guys that passed in and out of that New York Academy when we were there back in the day, it was such a different, just let me know if Jimmy's calling it.
Yeah, he's calling in a couple of minutes.
Okay, it was such a different time. And we talked about this a little bit when Danaher was in here. It was such a different time where it was still, I don't even know if it was coined mixed martial arts at that point. It might still have been no holds barred,
yeah,
or just right then switching over. But back then, walking into the academy, like right now, we and you both have schools, and there'll be a knucklehead here and there, but nothing to the degree of back then when you had guys not coming in, just wanting to test it out. And the traditionalists were worse. The guys that spent 20 years doing karate or breaking boards, whatever else. Now jiu-jitsu comes in saying, look, man, you know, a lot of that stuff's not going to, you know, hold water in a real fight, man. It's not going to measure up. You know what I'm saying? In reality, it's like they'd come in and just like try it, like try to like grab our throats, our reach for our eyes. And do you remember these times?
Yeah,
these,
man. You know, we're talking about like the new school stuff. You know, like new school technique. And what I mean, like new school is more like, you know, specifically like 100% like sport jiu-jitsu. For us being here, like in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, if you were the top guy in a school, like if you were like a high level, you know, fighter from a school on any given day, there could be some karate guy or somebody who's a wrestler coming in and saying, this thing don't work, I want to try it.
Exactly.
And you had to fight this guy in front of all the students.
Yeah.
You know, like I experienced that in Philly. You had that in New York a couple of times on any given day.
If you think about it, like now, like we just had Kevin Lee on the phone. I don't know if you know Kevin Lee. He's fighting in the UFC.
Yeah, yeah.
Tough guy. I think he was born in like 1992 when I graduated. So these guys were born, and the UFC came out in 93. So they grew up knowing, all right, man, this is what real fighting's about. We didn't really know. And like until, like we grew up, we were in it, like when it just was blossoming. Like, you know what I mean? From the beginning. So there's a lot of people going, nah, man, I don't believe this shit. Or I dedicated my life to fucking throwing ninja stars. Now you're telling me fucking that you're gonna give me an arm lock? I don't believe it. Yeah. So I don't know, but it was just such a little bit like the Wild West back there, man.
How good did that feel when you started to see through that process of like, oh, this really works. Like this is something that's going to always work. Jiu-jitsu is always going to be a thing that is valuable.
Well,
you know?
I
not that
got,
you didn't know.
Well, right I now. Got my eyes opened earlier in these tapes called, and I talked about it a bunch. These guys should give me a percentage of the fucking crew of the sales of this thing is the Gracie in Action videos. There's these tapes that the Torrance Horian and
Horian.
It was Gracie in Action, which was my first time ever seeing jiu-jitsu, and that's like the Valley Doodle fights. That's Henzo was on there and Half, and then there was some challenge matches at the, so it's like at their dojo over there and the academy in Torrance. You had Hickson fighting Zulu. I mean, that's when I first started seeing, holy shit, man, what is this? That was before the UFC, you know what I mean? So I already knew, like, you know, I was a believer. Yeah. And plus, I got into some situations as a kid, like, when I just started learning, I'm like, oh, this shit really works. You know what I mean? The fuck am I throwing a lot of punches for? You just strangle somebody. But, I love jiu-jitsu. But where the hell was I? So you came over, we got to the school. Shortly, your first MMA fight, your first big one, was when you were in Japan cornering Henzo. I believe this is the year 2000.
Yeah.
How's that for a good memory, no?
Yeah, that's bad. Very good.
And it was Akira Shoji.
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah.
And he was a stout little Japanese guy, stocky. Picture me as a Japanese guy right now. Yeah. But right, he's a stocky little guy, tough guy. He fought Henzo for 30 minutes. He fought, I mean, he was a dangerous dude.
He fought Coleman, Volchenchin, like all these heavyweights. There was no weight classes when we fought, you know?
See, it's amazing. There's guys like that that people don't even know about. Like, that's right? Like, I mean, that guy was a warrior. But anyway, so Ricardo was there.
He actually fought Henzo to a draw.
Yeah, that was right.
Before I fought him.
And that was, Henzo had to do a back-to-back fight. Like, Henzo was in fought Eugenio Tadu 2 weeks before that. And Enzo was crazy. Enzo would take fights back to back in different countries. But anyway, when you had that call to fight that guy, you were in Brazil at the time. You were in Japan.
I was in Japan with Hayan and Luca.
And, you know, and what happened? You weren't supposed to fight that.
No, I never wanted to fight. You remember?
I do. I know. You thought I was a little nutty for wanting the fight.
Yeah, I always, helped you, like, for your fights and stuff. I'm like, this MMA stuff is not for me. You know, like, I don't want to get hit in the head or whatever reason. You know, like, back then, it wasn't on pay-per-view. Like, it wasn't on TV, you know what I mean? Like,
it wasn't as glorious.
Yeah, like, I always wanted
And it was a lot of money involved. Yeah,
I wanted to compete, and I wanted to be the best, and I wanted to compete against the best, you know? Like, and, yes. And the way the UFC was set up back in the day, it was just, like, guys scrapping, you know? Like, it wasn't, you know,
yeah.
The money wasn't enough, and there was no real belt for the champion. It wasn't, like, a clear path to compete to be among the best in the world, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas in jiu-jitsu, we had that. Abu Dhabi, we had that, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think to explain that, I got to backtrack a little bit. You know, like, one time, I don't know if you remember, but, you know, one of these MMA guys come to the school, to Henzo's, Jeremy Horn.
Yes, Jeremy remember, Horn, of course.
He came to the school, and I grappled with him, and you know, he turned to Henzo, and he's like, man, this guy, Ricardo, like, he's pretty good. Like, how come he doesn't fight? And Henzo just kind of turned over, and I wasn't a part of the conversation. Henzo's like, oh, you know, Ricardo doesn't really like fighting, you know? Kind of like just kind of, you know, excusing yeah. me to the side. And I was like, man, Henzo thinks I'm a pussy, man. You know what I mean? Like, what's going
That's
on
what
over
you're
here?
Thinking?
So remember at the time when you used to fight in Long Island, like you used yeah. to have those fights in Long Island?
Oh, yeah.
So man. I came to you, I was like, Matt, you got to give me a fight in Long Island. And you got me a fight. And
your first fight was the Russian, not
I. Yeah, it was the Russian guy.
That poor son of a bitch, Kamzat Vitov something or rather. Dude. Tough. That poor bastard was a tough dude. I'm not being like that guy, but his first two fights were me then Ricardo. Yeah. The poor guy's been like, I suck. Because he was tough though.
Yeah, we used to have these like underground fights, open-handed strikes, yeah. you know, like in the ring,
supposedly
right? Like in the ring. And Matt yeah. used to kill everybody. And yeah. you know, and Henzo just turned to Jeremy Horn, who was a high-level, you know, UFC fighter. He's like, yeah, you know, Ricardo's not really a fighter. Uh-huh. And I'm like, man, I gotta prove to Henzo that at least I could fight. You
then
know?
You knee barred that Russian.
Yeah. And Matt got me the fight. I ended up winning that, you know, with jiu-jitsu. And for Pride, I was in Japan with Haiyan,
yeah.
and it was kind of the same thing, you know. I was never really too much into MMA, and one of the Brazilian guys got hurt. The yeah. guy who was supposed to fight Akira, and 3 days before the fight, they needed a replacement.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, you know, Haiyan and Luca, why don't you do it?
Yeah,
I'm like, all right, I'll do it. You know, like, and if Henzo thinks I'm ready, I'll fight.
I gotta watch that one again.
You know,
that was a fun fight.
It was 2 10-minute rounds, 25,000 people in the arena. Yeah. I had no idea what I was getting myself into.
You did good. You did yeah. great. Yeah. And you timed everything. What was amazing about that is, how much MMA sparring did you really have?
None.
And zero. Dude, you were doing jumping. I think you jumped and kneed him in the head. You timed your takedowns off the strikes. It was a really good fight. I mean, listen, I haven't seen that thing in fucking 20 years. Seriously. Oh, Ricardo, I know you a long time. I'm trying to think about it. I think it was a long time.
Yeah, it was 17 years ago,
that's
bro.
That's amazing, isn't that, dude? That's crazy.
I just, but you know, was great I was fight. Around you. I was around fighting a lot. I didn't want to fight, but I was around it a lot. What, you know, Henzo was training for the fights. I corner him, you know.
Do you realize it's because of, it's really, it might be because of you that I even got into UFC? Because what happened was, after that, they came looking for you, and
No.
When was that?
So here's what happened. I fought in Pride, right?
Yes.
So one day I'm hitting the bag at Henzo's, you know, yes. at the new location already, yes. and Dana walks in.
I was there, I believe.
I don't know if Lorenzo wasn't. I couldn't remember. And they wanted to get Henzo to sign with the UFC.
I was there.
Because they had just bought the UFC. Yes. They're like, hey, we just bought the UFC. And, you know, Dana was there. I remember I was hitting the bag
and
Dana was there. It's like, oh man, you're hit pretty. Yeah, exactly. He had hair and he was really thin.
I think it was with Lorenzo actually, wasn't he?
Yeah. And they wanted to sign Henzo. And yeah. Henzo's like, listen, I can't because I'm under contract with Pride, but I got these two really good kids.
Yeah.
Oh. And the two kids were me and you, you know?
Yeah.
So we both signed and we fought. And I remember walking to Henzo after they left because I didn't want to say anything in front of the guys. Yeah. And I was like, hey, listen, Henzo, like, this thing isn't even on pay-per-view. Like, I want to fight in Japan. Like, I don't want to fight here, yeah. you know? Because back then, Pride was huge,
yeah.
you know? All the big fights were in
and
Japan.
This was a big changing point because this was literally the second UFC of... We ended up fighting in the second UFC
second Zuffa.
By Zuffa.
Yeah,
yeah. They took over UFC number 30,
yeah.
and we were both debuted
31.
On UFC 31. Myself yeah. versus Shoni Carter and yourself versus... And you versus Matt Lindland.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
was... pretty shitty night for both of us.
It was two weeks after Abu Dhabi too,
and,
remember?
Oh, what a turnaround, because Abu Dhabi was so glorious.
Yeah.
So glorious.
We both made it to the final.
Yeah. We made it to the finals. Well, you know, what happened with me and your fucking brother-in-law. Wait, was that your...
This is my brother's brother-in-law.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're all family.
Yeah, we're all family anyway. We like to keep it in the family. Marcio Fintelos, our Abu Dhabi champ, yay. But anyway... we had a great time over there, man. And it was such a, when we went to Abu Dhabi, just not the, just only because you brought that up, or we brought that up, is it was, oh man, training for that was so money. It was me, you, Henzo, back then, Big Sean Alvarez, Loving Camorras, awesome. Rodrigo. It was us. That was us, yeah. Man. We went out there and we had a great time, dude.
Yeah, it was a good tournament for both of us, for sure.
Oh man, you had a battle with Arona.
Yeah.
You know? And among other fights that were phenomenal.
Yeah. ADCC always had that, you know, especially back then, just had this allure, you know, this sort of like, it was different. You know, it was awesome. It was really good for us.
I remember, it felt like in Bruce Lee, like Hans tournament, when we're over there, because you look up, and it's not like we're in a regular stadium. It's like they're playing fucking drums, and you hear, right? They're playing
There's barely any crowd but the Sheiks, you know?
We got the very funny Jimmy Norton calling in from fucking Iceland. Jimmy?
Hi,
Dad. Hi, Jimmy. Jimmy, we got Ricardo Almeida, my good friend, in studio with us. Henzo Gracie,
hey,
black belt.
Hey, Ricardo, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, Jimmy? How's it going, man?
I just wanted to call in to make sure that they know I'm still alive, because if they really like you, they might fire me and have you and Matt do it.
No way, man.
He's looking pretty comfortable in here. Jimmy, I miss you, pal.
I miss you too, man. I hate that I'm away for the first podcast after the McGregor fight. But I'm sure you guys covered it already.
No. You know what? We started to like open up that little can, and then I like shut it and I sealed it. And now I'm ready to open up that can again, because you're here. I wanted to save it for you, because we started to talk about it. But now let's start talking about it right now. Give me your thoughts, Jimmy Norton.
Thought was nobody saw McGregor going into the 10th round. I don't think any of us saw that. At first, I'm like, all right, McGregor has a real shot at winning. What did you think he won the first two or three rounds?
Of course.
I think kind of Mayweather won every round after that. Yeah. And it's almost like Mayweather looked bad, and then when he starts turning it on in like the fourth, you're like, oh, that's right.
Yeah.
He can throw fast punches whenever he wants. It's fairly effortless. But I'm telling you, there will be a rematch. Floyd said, this is my last fight ever. Shut up, Floyd. It's not. They're going to have a rematch. Conor, they felt that they stopped it a little too soon. He got into the 10th round. People will pay for a rematch, and they'll pay more. Here's what I thought about the fight. I thought McGregor was excellent. But the thing he does where he's putting his right hand out, instead of throwing a jab, he's doing like that thing that they do in mixed martial arts where you measure distance with that, which is great in MMA where you can grab and you can hide a kick behind. But he wasn't throwing a very fierce jab. He flipped the jab a couple of times, but I think that he kind of limited himself because he's just got this one arm hanging out there and he's loading up for the left, and Mayweather kind of knew he only had to watch out for one thing. And I think the ref was being very tolerant because McGregor hit Mayweather in the back of the head about 40 times. And the ref kind of, I think, knew it was his first fight and let him do it. So people who were like, he counted him out too soon, I think the ref was pretty good. And I think he gave Conor a lot of leeway. And he got between him and he warned him, but he didn't take a point away for hitting in the back of the head, which I was pretty impressed with.
Yeah, I mean, those were some hammer fists, like in close, that are just really... like instinct, you know, in MMA.
Yes.
To just pound on somebody's head whenever it's right there. But, and you saw, he said he was wasting some energy taking his back. Like, literally, he like go to his back a lot in that clinch. And he's like, what? And then afterwards, I saw in the post fight thing, he was when he was talking a post fight interview, he was saying, like, you know, he was wasting some energy with that. And that happened to him again. And he brought this up, Conor. He brought up how in that second Diaz fight, how he was getting. You know, it looked like the fatigue set in, looked like he was done. He weathered it and he came back. And that happened in the third round of that Diaz fight, I believe. And he came back for the fourth and fifth and actually got a second wind. So it would have been, I don't think it's a bad stoppage at all. And he wasn't complaining at the time. But, you know, with everything on the line, I don't know. I mean, maybe let him take a, maybe let him kiss the canvas. You know what I mean? I think that would have been a little bit more, you know, of a concrete ending, but it doesn't look, hey, listen, the guy's stock does not go down at all. Nobody expected him to do as well as he did. And another thing, I was saying this earlier, I seen these shows leading up to it with these boxing shows where they have these little round table meetings, and these pompous assholes are just, oh, you know, we listen, we all like, they're having fun with it, but they're like, oh, well, we know what this is. He's not going to land a punch. He'll be lucky to win. He's not going to win a round. It's going to be a shutout. It's a joke. And suddenly it wasn't such a joke. And he was in there. I do believe that, that Mayweather did have that plan of the, exactly what he was talking about. I don't think you'd know from his father between rounds, whatever the fuck. Right. He's funny. You got, you know, do what you want to do. I don't know what the fuck he was saying. Fucking what? I didn't know Customato, but I don't know. I think they had this shit worked out ahead of time. Where
the, well, what round, Matt, what round did he catch him? He caught Mayweather with a good left uppercut. Was that the first or second round?
Second round? It was either the first or second, because I know exactly what you're talking about. And it was beautiful. And, you know, people saying, oh, well, you know, Floyd was just, you know, bringing him along. I don't think he was planning to eat that.
No, it took him a big change in his game plan. You know, he was trying to stay on the outside and kind of throw that lead right hand. And when McGregor started countering him, it took him like a round or two to figure out. And he started just kind of walking in with his gloves and stuffing the power of the punches. You know, it was really like a masterpiece, I feel, tactically and technically by Mayweather. Just too much experience, but I thought Conor did amazing. You know, I never expected anything like it from someone coming from the UFC, and that's Mayweather. It's like the best ever we're talking about, you know?
It looks good. It looks good.
Conor was so great. Oh, sorry, Matt. I was so impressed with him. And it's funny, but my favorite moments with Conor is like when he lost to Nate Diaz, and then when he loses, and he talks and he does an interview, you're like, oh my God, I love this guy. Like, he just handles it so well, and he's such a dignified guy about it, and he just props to the other guy. And I thought it was so much better than I anticipated it to be. And if they had, I watched it at a bar in Iceland at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow.
And if they had a rematch, I would definitely buy it. I'm all in with this. I was really, really impressed and surprised with how well Conor fought. I do think he needs to work on that right jab, just because he's got to give Mayweather a little bit more to worry about, being as fast as Mayweather is. But I think Mayweather's full of shit if he says he won't fight again. I think for $300 million, he'll fight him again.
You're saying that Conor McGregor handles his losses better than, say, Ronda Rousey?
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate because Ronda, and she's also a lovely person.
I love Ronda. I'm not being a prick. I'm just saying she's not a very good loser.
You're right, she ran away from it. It's like you can't run away from it. You know, so that's like me. Every time I lose an erection, not talking to a person again. You got to take your losses like a man and apologize.
Hey, I tried a new cocktail. But I'm going to save that for off air, Jimmy. I'll tell you. Jimmy, I'm winking right now at you. Listen. I tried a new one. I think it's called the Rhino. I'm going to tell you when I see you. But let's get back to business.
Please do.
Now we're talking about...
That's more important.
Yeah, it is.
More important.
I know. It's nothing like a good cocktail. Gordo's just staring at me at this point. What's up, Chris, the producer?
I was just going to jump in. Hey, Jimmy. How's it going, man?
Hey, Chris.
I have the scorecards, which was kind of crazy to me when you look at it. One judge gave Conor the first three rounds, which I think is fair.
I like him.
The other two judges gave Conor only the first round and then gave Floyd the rest of the fight, which I think is...
Well, that's what's wrong with boxing. Boxing stinks. And I think the first three rounds, what did they have in it? They had it like 87, 82, if I'm remembering correctly. And the one unofficial one had it something like 85, 84. But to not give Conor those first three rounds, look, Mayweather is, again, masterful at not getting hit. He's great at putting his gloves up. Like, Conor threw a lot of punches that just literally hit his gloves or his forearms. And that's what Floyd's great at. But to not give Conor at least two of those first three rounds is I think, boxing being a little too protective of itself.
I agree.
Yeah, hey man, all I know is I'm not a huge fan of boxing now. I was back in the day. I enjoyed the hell out of some good fights, not only the Tyson, just the Tyson era, but the Hagler-Hearn fights and even like Leonard and Hagler. Like, I enjoy some classic stuff. I had a lot of fun with this fight over the weekend.
Yeah.
You asked me about the undercard, I don't give a fuck. I'm not a big fan of the boxing. But I enjoyed the hell out of this fight. I really did. And you're right, man. Conor, after the fight, by him just being like, I like that he brought up, do you think I got strangled on TV, live TV? He's got the right attitude, man. And it allows him to be relaxed in there. I think it really made, because they kept saying, like, this is what I heard them saying, these boxing experts before the fight, that, oh, that it's going to be great for boxing because they'll see the sloppy, they'll see how much more technical and the boxing is, the boxers are, compared to how sloppy the mixed martial artists are, even though it's a boxing match. That's what they were. That's what their points were. But Conor looked like he totally belonged in there. One of the best ever in this sport. You know what I'm saying?
I think these boxing guys are just trying to protect it, you know? Like, yeah. The boxing guys just try to protect boxing, you know? Like, the reason why it was huge back then is because everyone thought that the best fighters in the world were actually boxing.
Yeah.
Now people know that the best fighters in the world are not boxing. You know, yeah. Like, you could take Mayweather and he won't last not even one round with a mediocre, you know, 155-pounder from the UFC. And that's just the reality, you know?
Yeah, they don't have a great track record.
This is an amazing thing for MMA, I think, for Conor. Because I hate it to be corny and say, but everybody won on this one. Like, Mayweather won the fight. He obviously was the better boxer. I mean, it was very clear. But Conor has a tremendous amount of dignity losing the way he did. He did not quit. He didn't get knocked out. I mean, it was a ref stoppage. So there's always that question mark. Hey, how would he have been in the 11th? But I think this was just such a great thing. And the fact that he kept taking Floyd's back made me laugh. But that, again, like you said, that instinct where you're in a fight, you know, like hitting in the back of the head, you're in a fight, and all your boxing training is kind of hard to prepare you for. And what did Mike Tyson say? Everyone has a plan so they get punched in the face. So it's just one of those things where you're in a fight and you throw a punch to the back of the head. But I thought it was a great, great night, man. It's so much better than I thought it would be.
Jimmy.
And here's another one. Jimmy. I absolutely have to see it.
Yes, Jimmy, sir. You know who won the most, though, Jimmy? Us, the fans. We won the... Oh, come on. Come on, people. We won. Everybody. I'm sorry, Jimmy. I feel like I really belong on that Chip Chipperson fucking show. I got worse jokes than that mother... Don't do that voice. Don't do that. I think his jokes are better than mine.
No, they're not.
Shit. Yo, listen. Right, I had a ball before I let you go. You having a good time over there? I seen some of your Instagram with a fucking tree growing in your hotel, like half in, half... I don't know what the fuck's going on. Where are you staying? What the fuck is that?
Well, we're staying at... I'm at a Hilton in Reykjavik. We went for the night to a really nice, like a place. It's like a hot spring. So they had, you know, it's like volcanic rock and moss, and you go into hot springs. It was pretty incredible. And then today I went to Bobby Fischer's grave, the chess player. So it's been a morbid afternoon. I took a picture next to a gravestone. Like a creep.
That guy was fucking wacky.
He was out of his mind. He was crazy.
He's out of his fucking mind, that Bobby Fischer. You're a big fan?
He's one of my favorite people in history, but he did go down the rabbit hole, and he lost perspective. But again, you know, you look at people for what they were great at, and you realize that at some point they just they made a left turn, and then that's that. Fuck them. But, you know, I love what he stood for earlier before he became crazy. It's been a good trip.
Oh, well, listen, I'm sure you packed your vitamins. Your vitamin C for cocktail. You having a lot of sex? Are you having a lot of dirty, dirty sex?
Yeah, but unfortunately, it took my fist. That's what I've been doing.
Oh, Jimmy, on that note, I miss you, pal. You know, the great Bobby Kelly's going to be in next episode with me.
I know he is.
I had such a good time. I did, Chris, the producer, Jimmy's other radio show last week.
Oh, I'm
With Jimmy, yeah. Jim Norton, Sam Roberts show on Sirius. Give it a fucking shout out. And I had we had such a good time, though. No? Or maybe that was just me being having a good time.
It was great. It was a full house. It was really, really fun.
Though. Oh, man. You got Jimmy, you got the life, buddy. I'm so happy I'm in it.
Thank you, brother.
Hey, man, listen, have a safe trip. And I will see you next week.
Yeah, Ricardo, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. Enjoy Iceland. Take care. Have a safe trip home.
All right, Chris and Matt, I'll see you guys next week.
All Sounds right. Good, man. Later, bro. Safe trip.
All right, take care.
Later, bye. Jimmy. Jimmy's a good egg.
What a pro. What a professional phone call, look at that.
That was great, man, you know. And that's it with the McGregor fight. I don't know about a rematch, though. I want to see him. Don't get me wrong, that's great. But I want to see him fight with something he could, you know, use his legs. And
that's
I want to see some mixed martial arts.
Exactly.
This thing was great. He did great. let's get back into some, let's get back to the cage.
Man, just watching the prelims, you know, like, it's not Mayweather, it's not Pacquiao, it's not, you know, Canelo.
Yeah.
Watching the prelims made me realize, like, this is not real fighting.
It's also not for me.
Like, it's not, it's not real fighting, you know?
No, totally. It really makes you appreciate, you could start watching a UFC event from fight one, and that could be the fight of the night, and it's so
it made
exciting.
Me appreciate the UFC so much more, 100%. Yeah.
Chris the Producer, do you know that UFC Unfiltered is now available on Spotify?
What?
Spotify is what I'm yelling about. Oh, it's great. I know what you're thinking. Wait, Spotify has podcasts? Yes, your place for all things music now has the world's most popular podcasts. To stream UFC Unfiltered on Spotify, open the app, tap browse, and look for us in the podcast section. Follow us and all your favorites to get new episodes dropped into your library as soon as they drop. For more, head to spotify.com/podcasts. That's spotify.com/podcasts. Let's bring it back now. Let's bring it back to 2001. Myself and you, we were in Abu Dhabi and we were kicking ass. What a fucking time we had. And then after that, I mean, not really. We had our names out there, but we both did very well. This is the, so I want to explain to these young kids listening the ups and downs of this sport.
Yeah,
'cause we were on top of the world, man.
100%.
We got signed to the UFC right after kicking ass in Abu Dhabi. Hey, give me a high five, Ricardo, just because that was fucking... Yeah. I wanted to do it louder for radio. But listen... Listen to me. We kicked ass over in the Middle East, and then we got humbled. What the fuck,
two,
man?
2 weeks later, you know, fighting in the UFC. You
talk
know,
to me.
I think that's, you know, for today's standards, it's 100%. These days, the UFC wouldn't even let us do it to begin
with. We didn't have enough.
You know what I mean?
Like, we didn't have a lot of experience in MMA because the guys we were fighting. We get some tough, like that Russian dude was tough, and it's not that they weren't tough, but they did not have that much of experience, just like us, and they didn't have a great ground game. We had a couple of judo guys or a sambo guy, but they weren't the whole package.
Yeah, we weren't well rounded enough or experienced enough.
Yes,
to deal with when the fight is not going our way.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like we could do well because of our athleticism, because of the training, but. When things didn't go our way, we didn't have answers. That's how I feel, you know?
You had Matt Lindland, who was very tough.
Olympic silver medalist.
Olympic. And I mean, that was a hard guy to deal with on your debut. And that was actually a weight class. What weight was that?
205. They didn't really have 85.
Yeah, I don't think they had that back then. And then I lost to Shoni Carter. If people don't know him, he dresses like a pimp and he fights in a Speedo. And he knocked me out with a spinning back fist, which up until that point, no one got knocked out with in the UFC. So, I'm a first for that. It was an interesting fight. It's the first time you ever seen an Umaplata attempted.
Oh, you killed him on the ground. Yeah, it was beautiful,
I was put
match.
On a clinic of almost getting him. But you know what's funny about Shoney? If you ever rolled with the guy, because I was on season 4 with him, where I ended up getting my revenge. That's not the point, though. But you ever rolled with the guy or something, like with a t-shirt on or... He's really not good at all. And like you'll be like, what? You're not submitting this guy? But when I fought him, he was always so oily and like a big, he was like, and in Speedos, he's like trying to hold like a fish. Like he was just like, and he was doing awkward shit like the wrong way, but he was so hard to hold on, so slippery.
He's probably one of those guys that got in like street fights his whole life and you can't get a hold of him. You know, it's hard to get a hold of him.
It was amazing, man. But so that was our debut. And then just to show our journey, right after 9/11, we both had to go to Vegas and we both had our second UFC fight.
First UFC in Vegas.
First UFC in Vegas. Yeah. That's history. That's UFC 33.
Yeah.
And Dana hated it because almost the fights that were on the undercard, yours I believe was on the undercard.
Yeah.
And you got a finish versus the Wolf, Eugene Jackson.
I got submission of the night. It was the submission first time they gave an award. It was like a little glass trophy.
I remember. Now they give money. I remember it. I remember. Now they give money.
Tap out. It was like a tap out.
And back then, Chris the Producer, it was a tap out, a submission of the night fucking trophy. You put on eBay. But it was Chris the Producer. Back then, we had a ramp. So he'd walk down the ramp.
Like the old Pride
look. Back then, especially getting experience, was probably worse because you see the whole fucking audience. Yeah. You're like, holy fuck.
Like a walkway. And smoke and lights.
A little WWE-ish. They still do that at other events and stuff. We won't speak their name. No, we're kidding. But they had the ramp. So anyway, that night, Chris, the producer, worked out way better for us. I remember being in the locker. We were in the locker room. And the Carter went out first. It was nerve-wracking. But because it was after 9/11, and obviously that was a fucking horrible tragedy. And you actually seen
Was that Dean? Was that Dean that you fought?
No, he was on the card, Dean Thomas, though. He fought Fabio on a... We all got revenge that night because he lost to BJ Penn earlier.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then he had his revenge fight because he got his redemption as far as got back on track.
First
he
UFC
fought,
win?
He
yeah,
fought
first
Fabiana Iha. Probably would have been fight of the night. That was a good fight back then. Yeah. And so he got his first win in the UFC. We all got our first win in the UFC that night. And I fought Eve Edwards.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful match for him. He was tough, man.
Oh, that was very tough, man. And that, hey, man, talk about, like, even back then. See, now, back then, I like especially maybe just the way I was built, a lot leaner. I remember he was so good at getting his hips out. And I was trying to get him smushed up against the cage in the beginning. And I remember in a second, that knee's going to come up the middle and just wreck my face. Then I pulled butterfly guard and attacked his leg. And I used it to get on top. But it's amazing, man. That was back again. That was in 2001. And it was literally a couple of weeks after 9/11. And that, I remember being so stressed leading up to it, saying, all right, if I lose this fight, I'm going to be out of the UFC and this and that. And then after that, that tragedy, it was like, because we actually fought like I think the 28th of that month or something.
Yeah, the 28th, I'm looking at.
It was, dude, it was like a, so it was right after, Longo didn't go to corner me because he was still.
Nobody wanted to get on planes.
It was ghost town in Vegas. I had never seen it
like
that.
The weigh-ins were like a ballroom.
It was crazy.
The weigh-ins were a little bitty ballroom.
It was crazy, man. It was insane. But.
What were you going to say about that? The Dana, he didn't like the fight. There's some big names on the card, though. That looked
every
like a good
fight
card.
On the main card with the distance.
Yeah.
The undercard was great.
It was
Dean's fight was awesome versus Fabiana Iha.
It was Liddell and Murilo Bustamante.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like a great fight.
Yeah.
You know, it was
I remember that. And it was also Dennis Hallman versus Jens Pulver,
yep.
Yeah, and that one went the distance. It was bad. Yeah, there were some shitty fights. I didn't think mine was really bad at all, but it went the distance. I got landed. He landed an uppercut that dropped me on my fucking ass. Thank God Eve Edwards back then was like so concerned of my ground game where he dropped me with an uppercut. He jumped on me and he got so afraid he jumped off. Yeah. I'm like, oh, thank God. I know, cobwebs.
He said that when he was in here.
Right? I know. Yeah. It's the best mistake he ever made. I wouldn't be sitting here. Oh, man. But anyway, that got us back on track. We were in the locker room together. You came back so psyched after your fight. I remember you in the back. You yelled, Enzo! You're picking up Enzo. And then Enzo looks to me before I go out. And I had these tap-out shorts that were half black and half shiny. He didn't go, they're black and gray. It was like a shiny, like silver. And he was, and Enzo looked at those and goes, man, you're wearing those shorts? Holy shit, man. Ricardo, look at his shorts. Dude, I'm like, he's heckling me and I'm about to go out. It was fucking great.
Oh, man.
That was
how about Hazel walks up to you right before the fight? What's the strategy?
Yes.
Man? What's the strategy?
Yeah. What's the game plan? No. Man, get on the same page. I go, Enzo, they're fucking playing my music. Enzo, see, the thing is with Enzo, you can never get mad with him with that kind of stuff because that's how he was. Like, he's so, like, he didn't give a, like for himself, he wouldn't care. Like, he would just take a fight on a minute's notice or jump on a plane.
He's fighting, he's fighting in Abu Dhabi.
Dude, he's fucking
great. He just got a super fight in Abu Dhabi. Did you know this?
Who's he going versus? Do we know?
Kikuta, I think. One of the Japanese guys is fought. I just saw this.
He fought that guy for like an hour back in the day.
Yeah.
He choked him.
You know, he'll fight anybody anywhere, and he thinks that we're supposed to be the same.
You know what's so funny? And I teach my guys this. I remember there was a way, and... See, nowadays, it's not so many secrets because it's all out there. But back in the day, I used to always be good at reclaiming guard. So I remember the first time, you could say, I know when people say, oh, he came up with this, he invented. I hate to say invented because, you know, because I think people that never learned it from Enzo could have came up with stuff themselves. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I don't like to put the stamp on stuff.
People come up with the same moves sometimes, exactly. You know, in different gyms.
Exactly. So, but the first time we've seen this back take, it's when the guy's got the seatbelt position on all fours, right? And then when the guy goes to get his back to the floor, you initiate by bringing your knee into his hip and you end up on his back. Yeah. You remember this one, no?
Yeah, like the roll through, like rolling
the first
through.
Time I ever learned that, you strangled me fucking like four times. And I didn't know what you, because I was always hard to pass. I'd always at least get to my knees and get back. And I was at a very, so I remember I'd go to all fours and then boom, you'd roll before me. And you took my back, I'm going to say three or four times. And I'm like, dude, you got to fucking, what the fuck are you doing? And I remember you saying, all right, man, I'm going to show you. Henzo's doing this, but don't show anybody. This is just for us. And then we murdered everybody with it. But it's amazing, man, what memories stick out back in that that Gracie Kukoc Academy back in the day, yeah. When Henzo had his American business partner, Craig Kukoc.
So many moves, you know, so many things that, you know, we kind of watched be developed, like Henzo's Armin guillotine.
Oh, yeah, of
you
course.
You know, him doing it. And then actually choking Kikuta in Japan.
Yeah, choked out Pat Miletich.
The Darce choke was freaking Danaher and Sean Williams were developing.
It literally should be called the Danaher choke.
Yeah, and Sean.
And Sean. Oh, Sean was coming up with that,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, I remember Sean, you know, choking me with the freaking Darce choke. Like, every time I train with him, I get Darce.
Sean Williams,
yeah.
Huh? Oh, that's interesting.
You know, and then, you know, DRC went to Vegas.
And he showed it to Mark Lehman.
Mark Lehman became the Darce choke.
That motherfucker, you know? Didn't earn that shit. That's okay. That's all right. I don't like that guy anyway. But anyway, Ricardo, memory lane, brother.
Yeah.
But wait, right, now where were we? Okay, we went to the UFC. So what happened after that? Now, after that fight in the UFC, they came up with the weight classes. Back after UFC 33, you were fighting 185, no?
Yeah, after that, I fought. This fight in Vegas was the first 85. At first, I fought 205 and then down to 85.
Yeah.
I think my next match, I have fought this Russian guy that I ended up losing to.
Yes, I remember.
And I think...
Tough dude.
You might have fought either BJ or somebody else.
Yeah, his buddy, that Russian guy you fought, his buddy ended up... getting involved in some nasty shit, some gangster shit. That Russian guy that lost the Baroni, he ended up dying, I think, in jail.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
All right, now I'm going to lose everybody. But I'm just saying, we're going over some personal shit. But now look, when did you know it was time to walk away from the fighting? It's every fighter different. Because it's not like you were out there getting beat up or anything. Your last fight was with Mike Pyle. That could have went either way, I believe. Yeah. So... when did you say, every fight is different. Some guys hold on too long. They just cannot, they get so addicted to that thrill of the crowd and that thrill of competition. And there's no higher high than that. You know what I mean? What made you walk away from MMA?
So, you know, I kind of walked away from it twice, you know, like, I don't know if you remember, after the UFC, I fought in Japan. I ended up fighting in Pride.
Yeah.
And, you know, my wife at the time was pregnant with, you know, second child, and the UFC wasn't huge. This is like 2003, you know?
It's a different time.
The UFC wasn't big.
Oh, I know.
I was tired of flying to Japan. I wanted to spend more time at home, so I kind of walked away from fighting back then. Then in 2008, right after you went to the show,
Yeah.
Then you fought George. I remember watching your fight with George at the house, man. Oh. It was like the most exciting I've ever been watching an MMA match. It was like...
at your house you watched it?
At home. I remember watching it at home, like all my students, and it was like the World Cup. You know what I mean? It was amazing.
Oh, that was
and, you know, we know George now. We like George, but I love you.
You
know, you're my brother.
Of course.
But anyways, it was around that time that... you know, they had the Ultimate Fighter. So, you know, the sport's getting big everything was coming back to the United States. And
I was still
30. Yeah. I was like, let me get back to fighting. And I fought for a couple of years.
And then you had some of your best fights, man. I remember you fought Kendall Grove, who looked like you were a giant. Kendall Grove's how tall is Kendall Grove?
He's 6'6". When I fought him, he was the tallest guy in the UFC.
Dude.
At middleweight.
That was amazing, man.
I took a lot of hits on that fight, man.
Did you? From the guard? Come on.
I just sometimes see pictures and my face was like all purple, just knees. He was so long that I took two steps. He took one. He was further out. He would knee me on the way in, you know?
People don't even realize, man. You also strangled Matt Brown.
Yeah, that was a good fight here in Jersey.
Matt Brown's out there... Matt Brown, it was.
Yeah, Matt Brown was he in Jersey,
the
you know.
Immortal.
Yeah,
man,
the immortal.
He's still in there scrapping, man. That was, you made that.
He was a hard guy to fight.
You made that look like a Gracie in action video.
I know. I got poked in the eye. It wasn't intentional. He poked me in the eye, and I sit down. I sit down in the corner between rounds, and I'm like, Enzo, he poked me in the eye. It's like, good thing you have two eyes.
Yeah,
Enzo's get out there.
Yeah. Good thing you had two. He could bring you back, Enzo. He's funny, man.
So I actually ended up countering him on a kick, you know, and then I ended up choking him. But
that's a huge victory, man.
Yeah, but walking away from the sport, I lose this fight in Jersey. You know, it was like a weird decision. I felt like, you know, hey, I'm in Jersey. I'm gonna get this decision for sure, and you know, I didn't. And I always had in my mind, Matt, that like the day that I feel like I don't want to be there, like I'm done, you know, and that was the first and only time that I felt like that, you know. I don't know. I had a couple of fights. I lost to Heels. Remember how you came to Jersey? You helped me out.
Yeah, we were both getting.
Man, I was in great shape for the Heels fight, and I got caught.
You just got caught though.
You know.
Yeah, it's always.
And then I'm back, and I fought in Canada against TJ Grant. I beat him, and then you know
another tough. What happened to that dude? That dude was a tough dude. Has TJ Grant fought? Is that guy still in the UFC?
Let me see. I think he had a really bad concussion.
Did
man.
He?
Yeah. I'm telling he was you, knocking this, everybody so, out.
That dude was a tough dude. Yeah. And you beat TJ.
Yeah, I beat TJ in Canada. And then
I mean, these are huge wins, man.
Then I fought Pau here. And I just felt, you know, I lost to Heels two fights ago.
Yeah.
I was like, man, I'm going to be too far. It's going to take me a long time to fight for the title again. You know, and I felt like if I wasn't in it to be the champion or to be among the best, and I shouldn't even be doing it, you know.
No, I hear you, man.
I felt like it was time to walk out.
He, what about that TJ Grant?
His last fight was in 2013. He knocked out Gray Maynard, but then supposedly started training again in 2015. But he hasn't had a fight since.
Yeah, he has like bad concussion syndrome.
Oh man, thank God me and you didn't get beat up too much. Right or wrong? I think we did all right. I didn't have too many fights like my last Lytle fight where I blocked a lot of punches with my fucking head.
I think that as we got more well-rounded and we started striking more, that's when you start getting hit more.
I'm going to get right into it. I want to talk about your coaching. I want to get into that really quick. But before we do that, what memory with your fights with MMA? Is there a particular fight that stands out? That's, hey man, that was the most glorious moment of my life. I mean, is there one that really stands out?
You know, Matt, like it's so weird. Like a lot of times, like I get like a big win and I don't know if you ever felt this in your fights, you know, but like, man, like I almost like feel like not celebrating because it's not all that it's cracked up to be in a way. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I won, but like, it's not like I'm not the man. I'm not any different. You know what I mean? Like I always kind of had this. I think it's mostly just me.
Humble guy.
But I think that when I came back in 2008 and I choked, it was like a late replacement and I fought this guy. It was Super Bowl weekend. It's usually one of the biggest cards of the year.
Okay.
It was the first time that Lesnar was fighting, you know.
So and then you strangled the one that had
I did the guillotine and he tried to slam me and we spun over and I ended up catching him from mount.
That looked awesome.
Just from, I was away from fighting for 4.5 years.
Yeah, and that looked smooth
as shit.
So
to be able
to
come back and win a fight like that, that was like a really cool moment for me, you know.
It's funny how certain fights like that, because people go to me like, what's your favorite fight, George? I go, not the second one, you cocksucker. No, I go, that was almost like, but at this point, it's almost like a surreal moment. Like, you know what I mean? Like going through that.
Yeah.
You know, but it was amazing. For some reason, there's certain fights that just were so perfect that like stand out. Like I love that, like personally, like that Frank Trigg fight. I'm like, from the lead up to the execution to the, it's just like, oh, what a nice, fun fight. Can't they all be like that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For sure. And I think Brown, just because it was here in Jersey, you know, you're at home, you know, we teach. So all our students get to come and watch.
Yeah.
And after the fight, you get a little bit of a bigger chance to share just being happy with the people who are there every day for you. You know, we're like in Vegas. Not too many people are in Vegas, you know?
I love Vegas. Not for the sick reasons you think. No, I'm only kidding. I never lost. The only fight I lost there was my fight with Matt Hughes, which was a very close fight, and got fight of the night. Besides that, I never lost the fight there. And I had something called the East Coast Curse over here. I never won a fucking fight here.
Oh, man.
Fuck. I mean, let's think about it. Shoney Carter, Dean Thomas, which was like a sick joke because they raised my hand, then they
switched. That was horrible, man.
Did the old switcheroo backstage. That he still brags about, that fuck. But I love D-Dubs. But, you know, Carol Parisian, I thought I knocked him out. He weathered the storm and I gassed out to a freaking guy that doesn't slow down. So, I mean, it's just amazing, man. So, but, you know, again, I remember losing to Caro, and I went out to the boardwalk. It was Atlantic City. I had all my students there. Oh, so everybody's kind of quiet. So I kind of broke the ice going, all I know is you motherfuckers better not be joining a judo school now. You better be, hey, you're on the contract, you cocksuckers. Not really kidding. I don't know. Yes. But anyway.
MMA, there's no home team, you know? Like, when you fight at home, sometimes it's worse. You got everybody there. You know, it's...
I don't know what it was,
more
man.
More pressure.
BJ Penn, I fought in Mohegan Sun, and that was another close one. But it is what it is, man. Now, after fighting... You're still competing. You're still doing some jiu-jitsu matches.
Yeah, though. You know, jiu-jitsu, the way the federation works now, they have, you know, a lot of really cool tournaments. And they have masters divisions, you know?
I know.
So, you know, I started competing. You know, I always do the Pan Ams here in New York. Yeah. I'm actually doing it in 3 weeks. They have the no-gi pans. I'm going to do it.
You're in such
good
shape.
I'm like master three now.
What does that mean?
It means like I'm in
How old are you now?
40 to 45. I'm 40, man.
You're 40.
Yeah.
I'm fucking 43.
There you go. So I'm in the 40 to 45 division. Yeah. You know?
I'm going to wait until over 45, then I'm going to go beat up some old men because I don't feel like I'm that fucking. I'm going to wait a little
you
couple
should
of
do
years.
Do it, man. It's so I'll much fun. Like, it's always guys like us, you know?
I know, but I'm so heavy now, like just walking around. Not that I can't beat some chubby guys.
Of course you can. Of course you can. You know,
my thing is this. I roll lots, though, believe it or not.
Yeah, I always see videos of you with the gi and rolling, always, you know.
And believe it or not, I'm way more with the gi than anything lately.
Yeah.
But I don't look at it like I'm not doing any parambolos. I'm not knocking it. If you could do it, do it. But, like, I mean, I look at the gi as what you're wearing right now as a jacket.
Yeah.
Like, I'll use it, obviously, to there's certain grips. But I'm not that guy with the too many moving parts where I'm taking it out and feeding it. I'm fuck that. I'll use it as a jacket. I'll get your back. Knot. I'll strangle you with it. I'll try to get cross-side strangle. I use it to manipulate the balance to keep people away. I love the fucking gi. I've been just... And not only that... Like, I was going to one of my purple belts test the other day. Strong dude. I had his back, like, four times. And he is one of those, like, he had, like, a thick gi. And I trained, and I don't know if it was from training twice that day, where I had the grip. I had him, like, dead to rights. And I'd be losing that grip. I ended up getting a Kimura. It's not the point. The point is that afterwards, my grips, it felt like I was doing forearms for, like, fucking 2 hours.
Yeah.
It just makes you feel so good, no?
Yeah.
I love the fucking gi.
Yeah, I love it. I got to be honest. I haven't trained as much in it, like, the past 2 years. Yeah. I had a car accident. So whenever someone grabs the collar, you know, when you're playing guard, they grab the collar and they drive the weight in. It just kind of compresses your knees to your chest. That kills my back.
Oh, does it?
But, you know, when I'm able to roll with lighter guys that are super technical and they're not going to do that, then, yeah, it's a ton of fun. You know, I love it.
Now, the stable of fighters you have, I give a lot of, like, when did you start?
What are you talking about, bro? You got, like a freaking like a monster freaking factory there.
Myself and Longo, we got some fucking plays in there. But, again, with your stable, but we're very vocal, me and Longo. You guys have it's a similar thing that you guys have there in Jersey with yourself and the great coach Mark Henry. And you guys got a great dynamic. How did you get hooked up with Mark Henry? I love Mark Henry. It was his birthday the other day. Shout out, happy birthday to Mark Henry. How did you get hooked up with him? Through Frankie?
So, man, I got to say, like, almost everything that I've done in my life was kind of like, you know, right place at the right time. You know, I started Gracie Baja because it was walking distance from my school. You know, like, I came here in Henzo and, you know, like, our relationship, everything, it was just kind of like at the right place. Same thing with Mark. And, I'm a Jersey guy and I started fighting again in 2008. Frankie lost a fight to Gray Maynard and he wanted to work on his jiu-jitsu. And I was kind of like... the good jiu-jitsu that was within driving distance, I feel, you know what I mean? So Frankie came to me and Mark was Frankie's coach. And I was still fighting at the time.
Yeah.
And Mark lives like 15 minutes from my school. You know what I mean? Like, so we're like close enough. And he had a son. His son started training at the academy.
Yeah.
And then eventually I started training with Mark, you know, so I just go to his house. I don't know if you know, but Mark trains everyone in his basement.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a gym.
No.
You know?
Oh, really?
So we would go and, you know, it was just me, Frankie, and Chris Ligori at the time. You know, we would go to his basement and he would train us in his basement. Yeah. And, you know, after Frankie became champion, I'm sure it's the same, you know, with Weidman. You know, once you have a champion like that, it calls people's attention. We've had like more and more guys come in, you know.
He's a passionate guy, that Mark Henry.
He's a completely obsessive compulsive.
He's crazy.
He's nuts.
I love it, though.
You know, he's crazy.
You know? I seen when his fight with, Frankie Edgar's fight. And now this really goes directly, this compliment to you. I seen his fight with Cub Swanson. Now, his thing, it was a thing of beauty, because Cub's not bad on the floor. He doesn't look bad at all. I don't know what belt he is or whatever, but he looks pretty crafty down there.
Yeah, he submitted some guys, yeah.
Frankie would pass the knee line on the floor. I mean, I could break him off. I could sit here and give Frankie compliments all day long, but this was beautiful. He would get to that half guard with him, work him over from there, and when he would explode, in the instant he'd explode and open those legs, he'd go from mount to back. He'd lose anything, put himself back in half guard, work him over some more. It was a beautiful thing. I don't know if you specifically worked on that, but his jujitsu under you, really, because I know he had the wrestling background. Did he come up solely under you, Frankie Edgar?
You know, when he came to me, it was 2008, you know, so he was already in the UFC, you know. Frankie was like a local kid that I saw him fight at Ring of Combat.
Yeah, no, he was on our radar. We've seen him as a tough kid.
I saw him have, like, some beautiful fights. He fought that Russian guy from Long Island. What's his name?
I know who you think.
Tarasovicius.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Who was a really tough fighter, fought in the IFL for Hensley. And I remember Frankie, like, I fought Jim Miller.
Yeah,
so
man.
I remember Frankie just, Frankie's, you know, his intensity. I was like, man, I'd love to train a kid like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he'll come, but, you know, we're in different teams. And I'm kind of like you, you know, like, I'm old school. Like, I don't want people from another team coming and training.
Yeah, like,
you know?
We got enough friends sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, he ended up coming and it just, you know, it worked out great. And Frankie listens and he's very consistent. And, you know, it takes time to teach jiu-jitsu or teach anything.
Yeah.
What people don't understand is MMA guys are like triathletes. You know, like, they work on jiu-jitsu about a third of the time. They work on striking about a third of the time. They work on wrestling about a third of the time. And then they have conditioning. So it's hard to take someone like Frankie and make him like a super crafty jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
But you take like a really good wrestler, a really good athlete, and you teach them how to position themselves well for ground and pound. And you teach them how to mix the ground and pound with submissions.
Yeah.
Now you got yourself a killer. You know what I mean? Like, so I think with Frankie, it's been that progression and, you know, just his confidence. You know, it takes a very long time for someone to be confident and really, really good so that they could take more chances offensively, you know?
Speaking of taking chances, when Frankie Edgar just beat that the young stud,
Yair,
yes. Yeah. And the new school versus the old school, and this guy, and you see that Yair, he's on one of those skateboards fucking juggling with a snorkel on. The guy's doing all this new shit. The guy's doing all cartwheels. And, you know, Frankie goes in there, and he's confident enough to get in this. And it's with these wiry guys, they're dangerous. He puts himself in his guard, smushed him up against the cage, and just started working him over with well-placed, devastating fucking elbows.
Yeah.
And just literally just beat him down, man. That was the game plan, to say, I'm going to be within this guy. Talk about balls. I mean, to be within the guy's guard, I was afraid for something to come up and snatch him and a fucking arm lock triangle or something, but he's good enough of just timing it where he's getting out of danger and then coming back with a fucking devastating elbow.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I remember Frankie, you know, I guess leading up to the fight, you know, his big quote was like, you know, there's levels to this thing. He didn't say a thing. He said, you know, but...
Of course.
Yeah, that was a game plan.
Did he curse?
Yeah, he said, there's levels to this shit. Yeah. That was his famous quote.
See the difference right here between myself and the great Ricardo Almeida? He doesn't want to offend anybody. Go ahead.
So you know this. You've coached, you know, some really high-level guys. You know, Weidman being a champion. It's like, one of the great things about MMA is that it's not like a jiu-jitsu tournament that you don't know who you're going to get. You got like 12 weeks to study this guy.
Yeah.
And... you know, like Frankie said, there's levels to this thing. You know, I noticed as a coach that Yair had like a real offensive guard, but when you hit him, he doesn't open the guard.
Yeah.
And you know that when guys don't open the guard, they get their butt handed to them. You have to open
the
guard.
It's one thing if you got like a high guard, mission control, Williams. If you have him locked up, it's one thing. But if you don't have him locked up and you got those legs locked and you don't have his head or his arms controlled, you're going to get fucked up.
Yeah.
You better open that shit up.
100%. And one of the things I work on with Frankie is every time Yair will grab his wrist, I'll have Frankie drag that wrist and hold it. So there's a couple of instances, if you rewatch the fight, where Frankie is holding on one hand and hitting over the top of that same hand. You know, that's how he hurt him with the left eye. And, you know, I'm not here to take credit for Frankie. You know, it's like, you know, Frankie, Eddie, these guys, you know, like, you can't take credit. They, you know, they're going to do whatever they're going to do and they're going to be successful. But yeah, for that fight specifically, worked a lot on just exactly what you saw, you know?
Now, recently, was it this fight or the fight prior, actually, with Weidman? It might have been actually, I think it was before Weidman's Musasi fight. Mark Henry would come down to Long Island, and he was working with him some. And I was talking to him, and he was, and this is before this kid got signed, your kid that's fighting soon. So this kid, tell me about his name.
Zabit.
Zabit.
Yeah.
Zabit. Are you going to try his last name? Well, it's Zabit. All right, me neither.
He's fighting this weekend. It's Magomed Sharipov.
Yes. Gesundheit. Anyway, but all right, so Zabit. Now you look at this. Now, Mark Henry, who's, he doesn't, now he's very passionate, but he could not shut up about this kid. He was going off. He must hit me with how many bros? Bro. Yeah. I go, wait, is that guy, Mark, is that guy, bro. Five bros. He wouldn't stop. He would not stop. And he goes, this guy, he showed me tape of the guy as sparring and this and that. And the kid looks fucking phenomenal. Is this kid the next big thing? He's fighting. When is he fighting?
This Saturday.
This Saturday.
UFC Fight Night Volkov versus Struve.
What is that on?
It's on all on Fight Pass. The prelims start at 11:30 Eastern. Main card starts at 3 p.m. Eastern.
3 p.m. when?
Eastern, this Saturday.
This Saturday.
September 2nd, yeah.
September 2nd.
Finally, now, another
are
event.
Are you going to be...
Yeah, I'm going to be there. I think I leave either Wednesday or Thursday night. I leave, get to Holland, Netherlands, and just corner him and come home.
Bring back some edibles. No, I'm only kidding. Ricardo, stop. I got kids. But...
Why are you winking?
I like edibles. But you going to Holland? Stay away. Behave yourself out there. You're a good Ricardo. See, I remember Ricardo from 20 years ago. I know the guy for a long time, but dude, you got grown kids now. How old are your kids now?
Man, 14 and 12. Little Henzo is going to be 15 in the month.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. Mine is still young. Yeah. 8, 6, and 4.
I started earlier.
You did. And you know, my wife wants me to have another one. I'm tapping really? Out. Oh, I'm fucking tapping out. Are we still on air? Oh, anyway. Listen. So where was I? All right. So Mark. Zabit. Tell me about the guy. Is the guy just all well-rounded? Is that an understatement?
Man, you know, like I think you know, there's a couple of different things about Zabit. He's like. You know, friggin' like Neo from Matrix. He's like, if I had to describe him, he'd be like, you know, he does those like walking on the fence type of stuff like Anthony Pettis. But because he's from Dagestan, he also has incredible takedown defense. You know what I mean? Like those guys from Dagestan, like all they do is freaking
with
wrestle.
Some of your guys, and you know? I'm like, holy shit.
He does these beautiful counter throws, great boxing.
Yeah.
Super calm.
Who's he fighting?
He's just a monster, man.
He's fighting Nick Hine.
He's fighting like a replacement, like someone, you know, they change his opponent like last minute.
All right.
Man, and he's huge for 145.
Yeah.
You know, so like
so he's a 145er.
Yeah. This kid's going to be a superstar. Like if he fights how he's been training,
he's had eight fights,
you know.
How old is he?
He's 24. He looks like Lincoln. He looks like Abraham Lincoln.
He does look kind of like a laid back, like zombie killer. Yeah. And I'm like, is this kid even awake?
He don't talk much, man. No? But he's gonna be like, you know, he's like a Khabib, but instead of wrestling, like kicks and punches and throws and everything. You never
moved around with Khabib, did you?
No. I've just seen him like roll.
I love his Kimuras.
Bro, he's incredible. Like, the dude looks like he's strong, like a Nox.
What's up, Chris?
I was going to say, Khabib called out Conor after the fight. He wants to fight him December 30th.
You know Ali, right? You know Ali?
Of course.
You know, Ali is like a judo, really high level judo guy.
He feels good, bro.
You know, you know those guys are strong. You know, he was like Olympic level judo guy.
Yeah, I like
him. And, you know, I've seen Khabib moving with Ali, and man, like, you know, Ali couldn't move him.
Really?
You know,
he looks.
Like, I can't believe
he looks. Well, listen, I said it before with this Khabib. I can't. And I'm saying Khabib because we used to say Khabib and they're bitching that was.
Some of the fans
are like, there's no K, you cocksucker.
Right, Khabib.
Anyway, but no, ever since that fight, listen, I always was a fan. But when he fought Michael Johnson.
Oh, that's the same fight. And he's telling crazy.
Him, I'll tell you, it reminds me of the scene from fucking Saving Private Ryan when the dagger's going, the guy's stabbing him and he's like, what are you saying to me? And he's saying some creepy shit in German. When he's beating the guy up against the fucking, and he's going, just, you know this, I deserve this. Just give up. And he's beating him down. And it was like a fucking horror movie. You know?
And he turned to Dana and he started talking to Dana in between rounds. And Dana was like, you know, I still got to finish him. He's like, don't worry.
I love that. That's a monster. That Conor versus Khabib would be huge.
In Russia. Imagine that in Russia.
Oh, that's a movie right there.
Connor's game, probably, right?
Hey, man, I think they even, I don't, who knows? That's a fight to make. But, you know, what about some of the haters out there? What about Jose Aldo, like, giving, like, a tweet of crying, like a laughing emoji when Connor lost? Meanwhile, he went 10 rounds with one of the best ever in boxing, and this guy's hating on him. Hey, Jose Aldo, you should relax a little bit. You know what I mean? That's not cool. And I saw your fucking movie, and you owe me money. What the hell was that? I gave that thing in the beginning, and he's you ever seen the Jose Aldo movie?
No,
I haven't. Oh, what? I can never get that fucking 10 minutes back because I didn't make it through. I'm watching that fucking thing, and in the beginning, he's in like a favela, and he's like breaking, I think, he's got like a bat, and he's breaking mailboxes. So I'm like, all right, this is starting off a little exciting. And next thing you know, he's in like some kind of salon thing, and there's this girl, and it's the worst acting. And I'm like, I'm out. Is there a sequel? I'll never know. Holy fuck. Anyway, I watched about as much as that as his fight with Connor. What about about as long as his fight went with Connor? Anyway, what you get for being a hater, Jose Aldo.
Well, but then you look at some of the other guys. It's like Holloway.
What was he saying?
He said, respect Notorious showed the world how to compete.
Yeah.
Eddie Alvarez said it was a great fight.
Yeah. Of course. Eddie.
Cormier, all these guys. You know,
he took it personal. You know, it's...
Took what personal?
Like sometimes fighting doesn't bring the best out in people. You know what I mean? Like that's definitely.
He's a good man, Ricardo.
Connor?
Absolutely. No, you're a good man. Me? No, like I mean, I'm a prick. I just fucking. That movie was horrendous. What was the name of that movie?
I didn't.
You guys, and if anybody wants to see it on Netflix, tell me if you liked it. Holy shit!
No, I didn't see it. It's
because I remember Dana at the time telling me, "Oh man, that Jose Aldo movie is supposed to be really good." So I go, "Oh wow, let me see." Oh boy. Oh wow, that's a regular masterpiece. Oh, I'm sorry, Ricardo. As you see, I've matured. Ricardo, what's wrong with me? Listen to me. And also, I want people, if they want to see what Ricardo's up to now, look, I just watched it recently on UFC Fight Pass. Where are they now? They now? Season 3, right? Is it season 3?
I think so. Yeah, it was the last season. Latest season. They did one on Hanzo too. Supposedly it was really good.
Oh yeah, man.
You know,
I think I made an appearance on that with my family.
Oh yeah, it was a Hanzo's birthday, right? Hanzo's birthday.
I like showing off my family. They up my stock because they'll be like, "Look at this guy. Is he handicapped? What's he smiling about?" And then they see me with my family. Oh, he's okay. I don't know, Ricardo. Am I losing you, Ricardo?
No.
Good,
never,
man.
Never.
Well, listen, we're ending this thing soon. What do you want? Well, he's looking up what season
three.
You are.
It's season 3.
Season 3, yeah.
Of Where Are They Now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my kids are in there, too.
That's great, man. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
The best. What do you want to let's plug your school first of all. What else do you want to plug? Anything else?
Oh, you know what? I lied. It's season 5. My fault. Season 5. Season 5.
Fucking 2 seasons off. We like that fun. Go ahead. Hey, Cardo, tell me if people want to train with you, tell me where could they train with you?
Man, I have 2 schools, one in Robbinsville, New Jersey, not too far from Six Flags for people that know our area, you know? Actually, like 2 axes from Six Flags. We have a second school in Newtown, Pennsylvania. You know,
Newtown, Pennsylvania,
Bucks County. You know, running 2 schools. You know, that's pretty much it, man. I got nothing to plug.
I'm just happy you're here, dude.
I'm just a fan, like all of us, like you are. You know what I mean? Like I love this thing. I'd rather be doing nothing else.
Isn't it amazing that we're still here? Like we're still involved somehow. We're still involved with this sport, man. Isn't it great?
You know, and to be honest, you know, we're talking about it earlier. Watching that boxing match and watching the boxing on the card, it made me appreciate MMA so much more. Oh, you know, the type of people, the type of fans, you know what I mean? Like the type of promoters,
Man.
Everything is so much better in MMA than boxing. 100%. You know?
Now, do you watch any of the grappling events? Or do you drop?
I do. I do watch a lot of the stuff on Flow Grappling. You
did
know,
you
like
see,
I'm always keeping an eye on it.
Polaris.
I didn't, man. I didn't watch that.
I'll tell you. You know Shaolin, that Brazilian?
Oh, he's got beautiful jiu-jitsu.
Dude, man. He's looking. I listen. Maybe I'm not just trying to favor the old school, but holy shit, man. Our buddy, Kenny Florian, he put him to sleep with a clock choke, if I remember correctly. And now he just went versus Cal Uno, another old school dude. And he put him to sleep with a rear naked choke. Wow. What a well-rounded, and it was a beautiful,
yeah,
well-rounded game.
Shaolin always had beautiful jiu-jitsu, man. You know, that was one of that time that it was Shaolin, Leo Vieira. You fought Leo, right?
I went with Leo.
And Marcio Feitosa, they were like trading like world championships. You know, those were the three top guys before Cobrinha and this new generation of guys came, you know?
And with the new generation, with the leg locks, tell me, what is your... Now, my thing is this, and I'm one of my students, Jason Rao, is doing phenomenal with the fucking leg locks. Mm-hmm. He's like one of those freaks that he's just... taking guys' legs like it's going out of style. He actually went to go try for Abu Dhabi and he lost. He's getting better with competitions in general because he's got to cut his teeth with that because he doesn't come from a background of like a wrestling where they're used to competing. Yeah. So he's becoming that guy from the guy that's in the academy. He's becoming that guy on the mats in the competition now. So it's nice to see. And he's a great kid. But my point is, with some of these leg locks now, let's say... for instance, the Rory McDonald versus Stephen Thompson fight. Mm-hmm. He started with a roll, and I know some fancy Japanese names for all this shit, but I don't got them all. He did a forward roll into a leg. It's basically starting with him. It started with Rory McDonald on Stephen Wonderboy.
Stephen Thompson, yeah,
Stephen Thompson's leg, and a deep leg lock attack, and he ended up weathering it. And then he went for it again. He weathered it, and he got out. And it's one of those things that in a submission grappling match, like if someone's going with fucking like Eddie Wolverine or like, you know, he goes like really good, and they're on top. And a lot of times, if he gets them right away, he gets them. But if they don't get it, and the guy's on top, he's floating, and he gets out of one, or he gives back in, then he gets out of two, and then he gets him on the third, fourth attempt. If it's a real match, and if that's your main go-to is just these legs... Once you lose one, that guy don't have to be down there no more. Like, in other words, compared to attacking a leg, using it as a reversal if it's not working, like for combat, like instead of, you don't understand what, am I saying it right? Like, in other words, the lack of control where also you're using your legs on bottom as obstacles to make distance between yourself and the guy on top, and then your timing to get underneath, compared to just going underneath where you could actually get hit and hammered and then... If the guy gets away, now you lost all control. Do you think it holds water, these new improved leg locks into the MMA world and the...
You know, every couple of years, there's a new trick everybody's supposed to know that's going to be the best trick since sliced bread. You know, for a little while, the jiu-jitsu guys were playing 50-50 just before the brim bolo. You know, then there was the brim bolo, and then now it's the leg locks. My view is this. To be here long-term, to be successful as a competitor long-term, you have to be well-rounded, you know? So any shortcut becomes a dead end, whether it's a freaking brim bolo, whether it's a leg lock, whether it's anything. Yeah. You have to be able to fight from the bottom, fight from the top, do takedowns, pass the guard, take the back, do the choke. But, as far as like leg locks, is it effective? Heck yeah. Yes. It's super effective. And when you think about training someone from zero to be able to do well with a world-class jiu-jitsu guy, leg locks are really a shortcut. You could take someone that's really good with leg locks and they could beat like some really high-level jiu-jitsu guy that he would just never be able to beat him if he was doing guard passing to back takes and taking the back. He would never be there.
Yeah.
You understand what I mean? But it's a dead end. It's a shortcut. Guys catch on to the defense, or they are not there for the offense to begin with, and then it just doesn't work.
If you get there prematurely, if
that's all it's not gonna, you'd be able to beat a couple of guys, but when you get to the high level guys, you need to bring 3, 4, 5 really high level offensive moves or strategies that it can't be just leg locks.
And if you're so good at laying down with that leg, you hit it a lot in class, but you're so good at that where you get it more times than you don't. A lot of times guys aren't going to get that stubborn, sticky, ferocious pressure passing, which is exhausting for people where you're wearing, like just passing the guard in itself. If it gets too hard, you shouldn't just be laying down with a leg. You know what I'm saying? Even though it could work, it could be great, but it's also a great way of losing position. Like, you know what I mean? A real fight.
Yeah,
you know?
Here's the thing, there's two considerations that I have. I think number one is the most successful guys that we've seen with leg locks, presently are, Gary Tonon and Gordon Ryan, you know, the highest level guys, you know, two John Danaher, you know, pupils, they've been able to execute at the highest level, dominate at, you know, at, you know, the Eddie Bravo tournament, and, you know, Gary won the heavyweight. That's crazy what he did.
Well, he looked phenomenal. Gary has, even
what people don't realize is that, you know, Gordon and Gary have complete jiu-jitsu. They have beautiful jiu-jitsu everywhere. Gary was just doing freaking wrestling on the beach tournament and he was tossing wrestlers on their head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's awesome, man.
Gordon might take a little bit longer, you know, to catch up with the well-roundedness, but Gordon and Gary have beautiful...
He's a young kid, too.
Yeah, they do back takes. They do everything.
Yeah.
You know? That's one consideration. The second one with the leg locks is this. If you learn leg locks early on and that's all you learn, like, you don't know how to control the hips. You don't learn how to get underhooks and overhooks. You don't learn how to control the head.
So
you're missing so much of the control that you need to impose your game on someone in jiu-jitsu that it's just really like, you know, you're missing a big part of the game.
In general, just controlling somebody in general. You can't just go from, you know, this guy's giving me a problem, I'm just going to break his leg. You know what I mean? Because the guy will be flaring and kicking and, like, you know, I'm thinking about in a real situation.
To me, anyone who is a proponent of an individual game, be it leg lock only, be it, you know, a one kind of guard only, you know, like we have so many auxiliary guards. You have De La Riva, you have, you know, half guard, deep half, you know, all these variations. And someone who wants to teach and claim that only one type of guard, only one type of game is the solution to a very complex strategy, which is jiu-jitsu or fighting in general, it's just full of it, you know, and it's not going to be around long term.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like when Henzo came up, we didn't have as many names for some shit.
No,
so it's like with all these guards you're naming, I'm like, I'll kill. I got three open, close, butterfly, motherfucker. You know what I mean? And exactly. What is this move called? Something like, I go, that's called an arm lock. Really? Yeah, it breaks your arm, doesn't it? That's what Henzo's like. Yeah. Henzo's the same way. I go, Henzo, what do you think? He goes, man, if it breaks the foot, it's a foot lock. I go, that's right.
It's an arm lock, yeah. Keep it simple.
Well, listen, man, dude, we could do this all fucking day long. I'm so happy you came in.
Yeah,
you know, I'm happy for your success. I'm happy to see you every time you're in your corner. I love the piece they did on UFC Fight Pass on Where Are They Now? And
thank
you're a success. And it's fair to say, without getting too cheesy and corny towards the end, that I wouldn't be where I'm at without the beatings you gave me coming up at the Henzo Gracie Academy. So thank you for that.
No, man. Thank you. Same here. You know, like I think that you pushed me, you know, as much, if not more, than anybody else at a very key stage of my career when I was transitioning from being like a solely, you know, gi guy coming from Brazil, only doing, you know, IBJJF tournaments and going into ADCC, eventually into the UFC. I think that we gave a lot to each other, and man, you're like my brother.
We traveled
for sure.
The world, man. We were in Japan. We were in the Middle East. We were in Brazil.
In the UFC, yeah.
You know? And we were in Brazil. Where was I? I was about to say, there was a picture of us. Really
we did Pan Ams together, too, in Florida.
We did the Pan Ams.
Yeah.
Yeah, I won that shit. We did great. So did you. But listen, before we start hearing the music that Chris produced is about to play, there was a picture that, it's not like nowadays now when everybody has a freaking phone and there's a picture of us training every day. Somebody take us in a picture, me and you. And it was myself, you, it was Henzo with this guy that Robert. That used
oh,
to
yeah,
train on
at Peggy's. I know that picture.
And it was us, just mouths open, looking like two fucking pit bulls.
I got my hands on my knees.
Laughing.
I'm about to die. I have a heart attack.
It's like that sums up that picture. I love that picture. That was sums up just us. And again, I remember Henzo. We used to just train not a 10-minute match, a 5-minute match. It would usually just be until Henzo would call it. Or one of us would call it.
Yeah,
but
one of us would stop. We'll train until somebody has to stop.
Or else Henzo would have pity and be like, okay, enough, and we're both dead. But that's a great picture, man. But if you have that, tag me in that fucking thing, will you?
I will. I have it. I have it on my Facebook. I'll tag you for sure. I love that picture.
Thanks for hanging out. Are you going back to Penn Station? Where are you at?
No, I got my car. I'm going to just get in the parking and drive back. Yeah.
I'm going to walk out with you.
No problem.
Thanks for hanging out. Chris, the producer.
Yes, sir.
Play that music. Is it playing?
It's all right. It's already playing.
I love it. I will see you soon enough, Chris, the producer.
Yes, sir.
I'll see you soon. Thanks for hanging out with us. Bye-bye.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.